Larry Smith, one of rap music's first super producers. The reason I hesitate to call Larry Smith the original super producer is because it will undercut Pumpkin. Rest in peace to Pumpkin and Larry Smith, by the way. Pumpkin was producing rap records as early as 79 when they first appeared on the market. Records like 1979's Rappin' and Rockin' the House on Enjoy Records by the Funky 4 Plus 1, the Outlaw 4, Million Dollar Legs, and then all those Treacherous 3 records the next year in 1980, Spoonie G and the Treacherous 3. And then, you know, the Fearless 4 and all those different Enjoy records that came later, and then the Profile stuff as early as 82. Larry Smith says that he was a bass player early. He played on Christmas Rappin' and The Breaks by Curtis Blow. And this was around 79, 80, right after Sugar Hill Gang blew up with Rapper's Delight. So he was playing bass on those records, but he said that he wasn't really considering himself a producer at that point, just a bass player. So at this point, my definition of a super producer at this particular era would be someone who was producing for several different groups, and that's how they were making their living. Record companies were paying them to produce records by different groups. And again, he says that he wasn't producing those first few Curtis Blow records, just playing bass. But our history will show us and tell us that not many people fit that mold as early as 79 as far as being a super producer in the rap genre. It just wasn't an established enough genre at the time to even for someone to even have that title. So those were definitely the two early ones that, you know, even the records will bear witness to that. When you look through the records and you start to see the name on the productions, Larry Smith and Pumpkin definitely early on. And then later on, a few years later, cats like Marley Marl and people like that who were getting work actually producing records in the rap genre. Now, to take it back to the essence, Larry Smith grew up in St. Albans, Queens, only a few blocks away from Hollis, Queens, which of course is the home to LL Cool J and Run DMC, both monumental figures in the genre. But Larry Smith goes far beyond Curtis Blow, Run DMC, Houdini, or any of the productions that he actually ended up being known for. As early as 1967, before there was any such thing as rap records or even the subculture of hip hop, Larry Smith was playing with the Firebolts on actual recordings. He was a bassist with that group. He was traveling with a band called Brighter Shade of Darkness, and he was also playing bass for the blues artist Jerry Washington. Now, to put it in perspective, the kind of cast that Larry Smith was rolling with, and just the kind of musical genius that was coming out of that part of Queens, you got to go back to a group of musicians called the Jamaica Cats. Now, the Jamaica Cats were disciples of the late, great Weldon Irvine, monumental jazz artist who was the band director for Nina Simone. He wrote Young, Gifted, and Black for her. Legendary jazz artist in his own right. Heavily sampled in that 1990s kind of resurgence of jazz and hip hop, you know, that whole sampling era, heavily revered in that era. And Weldon Irvine was born in my home state of Virginia. He was from Hampton, Virginia, but he moved later on in his life to Queens. Now, Weldon had many disciples, but the Jamaica Cats were probably his most successful disciples as far as the recording industry. And the Jamaica Cats consisted of Don Blackman, Tom Brown, Bernard Wright, Lenny White, Marcus Miller, Omar Hakim, and Larry Smith was rolling in that circle of musicians. These are the guys who brought you in the late 70s records like Jamaica Funk, or Funkin' for Jamaica is the actual title. It was a record credited to, it was a record by Tom Brown, but the Jamaica Cats were heavily involved. Don Blackman, legendary jazz and probably just as much funk artist. Bernard Wright, jazz, funk, R&B giant on Arista. All these cats had that common thread of that Arista recording history. Tom Brown, you know, great horn player, along with Lenny White, Marcus Miller, Omar Hakim, all very successful within the recording industry. And that's the musical fraternity and musical group that Larry Smith was rolling with. Now, Larry Smith went to high school with the brother of Joseph Simmons, who was Run from Run DMC, and Russell Simmons, who was the great Russell Simmons, the founder of Rush Artist Management and Def Jam Recordings and Fat Farm, and of course, the list goes on, Def Comedy Jam. But Larry Smith went to high school with the older brother of Run and Russell. Now, through different friendships and affiliations with, I believe, Rocky Ford and J.B. Moore. My memory may be not right on those. I think those are the names. If you look at the first Curtis Blow records, in addition to seeing Russell Simmons' name on like Christmas Rap and the Breaks, you'll see, I think, Rocky Ford and J.B. Moore. Those were basically producers, cats that used to work at Billboard. And they were the ones who secured and helped Curtis Blow get his deal. And they also had some kind of relationship with Larry Smith. So between those relationships and the fact that, like I said, Larry Smith being from Queens, right up the street from Hollis, and going to school with Russell's brother, we get Larry Smith playing bass on those first couple of Curtis Blow singles. And he would come back later and play bass on other songs as well for Curtis. But in the meantime, Curtis and Russell develop a band called Orange Crush. And in the beginning, they were the backing band on tour with Curtis Blow. And Orange Crush consisted of Allison Williams, who later became a singer on the Def Jam label. And this was back in the late 80s. Kenny Keys, Trevor Gale, Bobby Gass, Robbie Griffin, who was actually Rakim's brother, Eddie Colon, and then Davey D, also known as Davey DMX, on bass. So that was Orange Crush. Now, it's not necessary, but it would probably make it go a little smoother for those who haven't seen my lesson on Run DMC. And it's, I think it's titled, Run DMC Crush Grooves 1 through 4. And Run's New Style. That's the title of it. But the Crush Grooves were Sucker MC's, Hollis Crew, Darl and Joe, and Together Forever. And they were just these little names that they would give certain songs. They would call it a Crush Groove. And all of that crush, and the words crush and rush. Curtis Blow tells me that the whole crush thing came from Curtis, who was, you know, which was Curtis Blow's first name, and then Rush, who of course was the nickname for Russell Simmons. So Crush came from those two. So the movie Crush Groove, you know, there's that. You saw the name Crush on a lot of stuff, Orange Crush, and then the Crush Grooves that were the Run DMC songs. Now again, this was the band that was a touring band for Curtis Blow. Well, after a while, the band broke up. When the band broke up, it was basically just Russell and Larry Smith. But Orange Crush had a song called Action right around 79, right around the same time that Curtis Blow's first records were hot. Now, they were on Prep Street Records, but it got picked up by Mercury Polygram, which was Curtis Blow's label. So you'll see one pressing on Prep Street, the very first one, and then you'll see a later pressing on Mercury Polygram. And of course, it was Allison Williams singing the lead on Action. So that's the only record that they released, I'm pretty sure, as Orange Crush. And that record has great significance, and I'll get to it in a minute, but I still want to draw some parallels and some significant points about the greatness of Larry and the versatility of Larry. But that was the first Orange Crush record that ties directly into the birth of Sucker MCs, which was the kicking in of the door for Run DMC and simultaneously the beginning of what was called the New School. And again, if you go to the Run DMC lesson, you'll get all that a lot deeper. Before I get into that, one of the greatest things about Larry to me as a producer, and he's not a producer in the same vein as, you know, what you call a rap producer now, somebody who just makes a bunch of beats and puts them on a CD or you know, a MP3 file and emails them to somebody that raps. This was at the time when you really were producing an artist. And one thing that Larry said, I think it was in a piece written by Brian Coleman, the good historian and author. Brian Coleman did a piece on Larry. And Larry said that for him, a producer was not just somebody who made the music. A producer was somebody who brought the best out of an artist. And he said that he would craft his tracks to the artist and what the artist was trying to do. So the greatness to me of Larry Smith as a producer and what a producer was actually defined at that time in the early part of the 80s was that he could produce. The biggest groups that he produced for were Run DMC and Houdini. And just a side note, he said he made a lot more money from the Houdini productions because Profile either was not paying properly or was slow to pay. I think it was probably a combination of both. But because Houdini had the connection with Jive Zomba, and Jive Zomba owned their own recording studio. They used to record over in the UK. And, you know, the money came, you know, more plentiful and rapid with the Houdini situation. But either way, that's just a side note. But the fact that he could produce for Run DMC and Houdini simultaneously, and the sounds could be so much night and day, you know, even one with a trained ear. If you listen to Sucker MCs, Jam Master Jay, and Hollis Crew, songs that I'll be playing snippets from all of those and as usual going through and talking about the greatness of those pieces of music. You listen to those songs and then you contrast and compare those to 5 Minutes of Funk, Friends, and One Love. They're night and day, and they complement the groups perfectly. So that's the genius of Larry, is that he could have that kind of range where Run DMC stuff was just basically drums and maybe a few keyboard stabs on some songs, but on Sucker MC's only drums. But then a song like One Love could be full of music. A song like Funky Beat could have, not, I'm sorry, 5 Minutes of Funk could have several things going on, and they're both respected rap recordings at the same time. That's not an easy feat. And one quote from that Brian Coleman piece that I was speaking of, and it's something that I always felt, so it was good to see Larry actually said it in his own words. He said, Houdini could never have been as hard as Runnin' D. That just wasn't them. And Runnin' D could never have been as smooth and silky as Houdini. And I totally agree. That was greatness on parts of both of the groups, but definitely greatness on behalf of the producer. And again, we're talking about a producer that's more in the vein of like what Quincy Jones does when he produces. He, you know, maybe doesn't touch an instrument, but he knows who to bring in to play certain parts, which Larry Smith said he did. He said he brought in specialists to do what he couldn't do. You know, he might program the drums and play the bass, and he would bring in the right guitarist and the right keyboard player, etc. So he's more in the vein of that kind of producer, and it showed his greatness that he would craft the masterpieces that he did for Run DMC and the masterpieces that he did for Houdini, and then the Jimmy Spicers and the people in between that he crafted masterpieces for as well. So I believe that's a good enough foundation for you to get a good idea of who Larry Smith is and where he comes from. Again, and this is no disrespect to rap music or the rap genre, but he's just not some cat that just, you know, hopped into rap music. This is a cat that goes back to the 60s playing with blues artists and playing with, you know, different funk artists and some of the greatest jazz artists. And then he was brought on board to produce these or play bass on some of the first rap recordings by Curtis Blow. And then he parlayed it. You know, by learning, you know, getting his chops in and learning what to do in the studio to become a producer. So that just shows you the range and the fact that, again, this is just not a rap cat who jumped in and started doing something on rap records in the late 70s. He goes back well over a decade before rap even hit records. So with that groundwork being laid, I'll play Action by Orange Crush, which actually became a breakbeat in itself. You know, the DJs in that era, early era, that were playing, you know, the hip hop clubs, you know, Fever and T Connection and the different clubs in New York, were actually spinning two copies of this beat and rhyming over this. And this is Allison Williams on lead vocals in his Action. Yes, indeed, and you can hear the superior bass playing on the track, and that's something you might want to take note of, because that's the signature sound. You know, of course, he was a bassist, but he would take that into a lot of his other works of production, and you would definitely hear it in some other joints down the line. Now, key thing about that record, like I said, very important. It became a breakbeat. And I did misspeak. That record was not out at the time that Curtis Blow's first records were hot. His first records were hot like 79, 80. And again, the Orange Crush was the touring band, and they broke up, and you know, there was the hiatus. And then they came out with this particular record in 82. So this was a breakbeat. And if you check the Ultimate Breaks and Beats, the historic compilation that changed the face of how rap records were made, that record's one of them. And you'll see that Dr. Dre used it for Nice-D, for Michelle A. And I would not be surprised at all if he didn't pull it off of the Ultimate Breaks and Beats, which a lot of producers were doing at that time. Wasn't a rare record by any stretch of imagination. I remember having that record back when it was out. I actually had a Prep Street copy of it. So, you know, not a rare record at all, but definitely part of that Ultimate Breaks and Beats. But the real significance of it is if you listen to the drum pattern, it was actually played on real drums by Trevor Gale, who was the drummer in Orange Crush. That drum pattern would end up being the drum pattern for Sucker MCs, which, again, I probably talk about it in at least, I think I've done almost 30 lessons at this point, and I know more than half talk about Sucker MCs, because it was a paradigm shift. It was the changing of the guard, the passing of the baton from the original first school of artists who used to be around before rap got on record. Sucker MCs effectively shut that down, that whole movement, and it brought in something brand new. So, you know, the importance of Sucker MCs can never be overstated. I talk about it a lot, and I will continue to talk about it, you know, because it's very, very relevant. It was, again, it's a paradigm shift. So if you listen to that drum pattern, even the beginning boom, cack, 100% identical to Soccer MCs because what Larry Smith did, again, the next year is just Russell and Larry. So Larry took the Oberheim DMX drum machine, and again, according to that piece that Brian Coleman did, the interview he did with Larry, he says the DMX, he took it right with the settings that it came from out of the box from the store. He didn't tinker with anything. He didn't tune the drums. Just like it was out of the box, he programmed that beat, but he programmed it based on the drum pattern from Action by his group, or the group that he was with, Orange Crush.
Me to say some MC rhyme, so I said this rhyme I'm about to say. The rhyme was there, but then it went this way. Took a test to become an MC, and Orange Crush became amazed at me. So Larry put me inside his cap to lack. The chauffeur drove off and we never came back. Dave cut the record down to the bone, and now they got me rocking on the microphone. And then we're talking autographs and tears and laughs, champagne, caviar, and bubble bath. This here, that's the life that I lead, and you sucker MC. Take that and move back, catch a heart attack, because there's nothing in the world that run no level like a cold chill at a party in a b-boy stand, and rock on the mic and make the girls wanna dance, fly like a dove and come from up above. I'm rocking on the mic and you can call me Run Love.
DMC in the place to be. I go to St. John's University, and since kindergarten I acquired the knowledge, and after 12th grade I went straight to college. I'm light skin, I live in Queens, and I love eating chicken and collard greens. I dress to kill, I love. I'm an MC, you know who's versatile. Say I got good credit in your regards. Got my name, not numbers, I'm a credit card. I go uptown, I come back home. With food, me, myself, and my microphone. All my rhymes are sweet delight. So here's the number one for y'all to bite. When I rhyme, I never quit. And if I got a new rhyme, I'll just say it. Cause it takes a lot to entertain. And sucker MCs can be a pain. You can't rock a party with the hip and hop. You gotta let them know you'll never stop.
You gotta know when to start, when the beats come in. An incredible record from, you know, from beginning to end. I could never stop talking about Sucker MCs. I know I get long with on these, so I won't tell any Sucker MCs stories, but I know I heard that record more than 1,000 times in my lifetime. I mean, as Sucker MCs is a record for those that were on the scene at that time. And myself being an MC, and, you know, by this time I've been rhyming, you know, for a couple years by the time 83 hit, as a very young cat. You know, every skating rink that we went to, everywhere we performed at, anybody that wanted to be an MC, I would draw the parallel of, you know, on a dance hall scene, you know, the Jamaican cats, when they would toast and do their battles, everybody would use the same rhythm. You know, the same beat, same track. That's how it was when MCs were battling in this era. You know, when you battle somebody or you rhymed at the you know, we had a skating rink here called Skateland, and we had a lot of MC contests and a lot of concerts and stuff. And whoever was the opening act or whoever was battling, the instrumental for Sucker MCs was what you rhymed off of once that record dropped. And for at least 2 years after it dropped, you rhymed off of Sucker MCs. It was that much the template at the time. It was just such a dope record, and so many DJs had routines off of it. And it's just, you know, I never get tired of hearing it. It's always magical, and I've heard that record again probably more than 1,000 times in my life, probably well over 1,000. But everything, the cadence of those cats, and, you know, even DMC, with "it takes a lot to entertain," just the with the pronunciation, every little nuance of the record. And I'm sorry for getting off like that, because it's about Larry Smith and not Run DMC, but you, if you were there, you remember, you gotta love Sucker MC. So that drum pattern was the drum pattern that Trevor Gale had played on actual drums. And I'm assuming the hand clap was probably a drum, you know, it was definitely a drum machine on an Action record. But the drums were actually real drums. And then Larry Smith went in and replicated or duplicated that drum pattern down to the hi-hat and hand clap. So again, important record. Again, you know, if you haven't seen my Run DMC lesson, you know, if you go back and check it out, it will definitely give you some insight into what I'm talking about now. So at this time, you know, in 83, with this recording, I still don't think that under the definition that Larry Smith was using as, you know, what a producer was, I don't think he was considering himself producing yet. He was moving there. And I'm not trying to speak for him, but just from what the little bit that's out there that's available of him in his own words, I don't think he considered himself producing yet, even though he was. You know, he had programmed the drum, and he said this was a simple record. It was nothing to it. It was just drums. And it's like that, which is shares, you know, space on the same 12-inch single. What was it much more than that? I think it was like the same, you know, Oberheim DMX, maybe like a Prophet 5 keyboard, you know, mixed in there. I believe that's what it was. And you heard, you know, on the song when Run says, Larry put me inside this Cadillac, the chauffeur drove off and he never came back. And Dave cut the record down to the bone. He's naming the people in Orange Crush. Larry, you know, Davey DMX, who actually, Larry wanted Davey DMX to be the DJ for Run DMC, but Run DMC wanted Jam Master Jay. But Larry preferred Davey DMX. But, you know, in the beginning, nobody really knew, you know, unless you were, you know, part of their clique or in Hollis or something, nobody knew who those names were. Like, you know, who was Larry, you know, who was Larry? You know, and then of course Davey DMX showed you when he made One for the Trouble, you know, a year or so later, and he cut that part. You know, Dave cut the record, you know, he actually cut that himself. But so that's that record. And I'm gonna kind of ping pong it between some Houdini and some Run DMC, and then I'll throw in some other productions. Most of what you'll hear will be Houdini and Run DMC in this lesson. You're gonna hear a lot of instrumentals. For two reasons. One, you already heard the vocals to these songs a million times. You can go anywhere and find them and listen to them. But you get a lot more out of the tracks, and you a lot more appreciation for the production when you can hear just the instrumental and hear everything that he was doing. So you'll hear mostly instrumentals. And I want to go back and forth between the two, you know, not like a battle, but definitely to juxtapose and to contrast and compare. Look what he did with Run DMC, and then look what he did with Houdini. Successful on both of them. Legitimate to the streets on both of them. Dominated the pop charts and the soul and R&B charts with both. So Jahlil of Houdini was telling me that, okay, their first album had the Haunted House of Rock and, you know, it's all in Mr. Magic's Wand and songs like that. The first album was produced by Thomas Dolby, who of course made Blinded Me with Science. Thomas Dolby produced a lot of those tracks. He produced Magic's Wand, which was, you know, they had a video for that and everything. Jahlil tells me that Mr. Magic introduced him to Russell Simmons, and then Russell Simmons introduced Jahlil to Larry Smith. Now, when Jahlil inquired about maybe doing some work or having Larry Smith do some work with them, Larry Smith really wasn't interested at first. He said, you know, really, I ain't heard nothing from y'all that impressed me yet. And I think, yeah, Jahlil actually said that Larry told him, you know, yeah, you know, I'll take a check from y'all, but I ain't impressed, you know, frankly, with anything you done. And all he had done at that point was the first album with Magic's Wand and Haunted House of Rock, which was good music. It really was. You know, it's kind of funny because you had a person that wasn't versed at all in rap recordings or anything historically with rap, you know, Thomas Dolby, a great musician, but just not in the vein of rap. So, you know, I guess Larry just wasn't impressed with it. And to backtrack a little bit, Jahlil said that actually, you know, he didn't just approach him about music right off. They developed a real friendship. And they talked about, you know, music and everything. And he said that Jahlil, you know, Larry would always play Jahlil different tracks and said, oh, I just did this and I got this coming up. But he would never offer anything to Jahlil or offer to do any work, you know, knowing that Jahlil was an artist and, you know, had a recording contract. You know, so Jahlil said he just let the chemistry happen on its own. He wasn't going to push it or definitely, you know, beg this cat to work with him. He just let it happen as it happened. And as karma would have it, one of Larry's fellow bass players who was in a band with him at the time was working on a car, and he sliced off a couple of his fingers. And that's not funny, but... And Larry was in a bind. He, you know, he was down a bass player, and it was affecting him financially. And he told Jahlil straight up, look, you know, I need some money to do some things that I need to do because I'm down a bass player. And I can let you hear some stuff that may be good for your group. And Jahlil said the timing was perfect because they're about to go into the studio. So long story short, they got together. Jahlil listened to some tracks. And the first thing that Larry Smith ever recorded for Houdini was Friends and 5 Minutes of Funk. Well, you know, that was one 12-inch with both of those 12-inch single with both of those songs on it. And of course, we know that was the single that catapulted Houdini into where they would eventually go. You know, they already were a name. People had heard Haunted House of Rock. People had heard the you know, the promo stuff that Houdini had done for or that Jahlil had done for Mr. Magic, and the actual Magic Wand record. But of course, 5 Minutes of Funk and Friends took them to where they needed to be. Now, when Jahlil went to listen to the tracks that Larry had, one of them was just the beat for 5 Minutes of Funk, and just the beat, and some guitar was added. But what's very interesting about the genesis of this track is that Jahlil says originally it was rock guitar that was, you know, the bass that you hear now, the bass guitar you hear now in 5 Minutes of Funk was actually a rock guitar originally. And he said there was even some beef with Run DMC about that, because Run DMC was trying to get their rock thing off. So there was an issue with that, which is interesting again, because as I've said in a couple of lessons, you know, particularly the LL lesson, LL was going to use the bells or Mardi Gras by Bob James. And there was an issue because Run DMC was about to use it for Peter Piper. So he changed it and he put the Trouble Funk break in for Rock the Bells. Either way, what I draw from that is, you know, everybody was under Rush management. All these groups were managed by Rush or either on Def Jam or some kind of way affiliated with Rush. And Run is Russell's brother. So again, this is my opinion. Nobody told me this, but it just looks like, hey, if you try to do something that's going to affect Run DMC, you know, doing something first and affect what they're doing, you know, no, you're not going to be able to do it. So I think that's a very interesting dynamic there. So again, I want to stress what 5 Minutes of Funk would have sounded like. Now, 5 Minutes of Funk is a perfect record and one of my favorite Houdini songs, probably my favorite Houdini song out of many. And I want to read to you from my interview with Jahlil, because I want to say exactly what he said about what 5 Minutes of Funk really was supposed to be. He said, I said, let me put it in perspective. When Larry invited you to listen to music, one of the tracks was 5 Minutes of Funk. Jahlil said it was just the beat. We added some stuff together. The bass line was something I was just humming, and he put the funk on it with the mini Moog. And it was part rock guitar, part bass line. We went to Europe to lay the track, and he left the mini Moog in New York, and I was real pissed. They couldn't duplicate the sound of the mini Moog. We were forced to go with the Jazz Fender bass, which I like the sound of. That's how other cats got the credit for being the first to do rock and roll. Not that we wanted to do just rock, but it was a mixture. There was also a saying that we should take the guitars out because the title had the word funk in it. But Parliament had songs with rock guitars, so we could have done it. There was a little beef about that, but the title was based on 7 Minutes of Funk, which was an old street record or old breakbeat. Now, I do want to interject here just for history's sake, and I mentioned this in my Treacherous 3-piece, that even though they don't get credited for it, the first record to really have rock on it and mix rock with rap was the Body Rock by the Treacherous 3, and that's probably 82 or something like that. And the Body Rock, of course, Puffy has sampled that for Mariah Carey, and you know, but that record had heavy, heavy guitar on it, and it wasn't something that was purposely done. Just the cat, LA Sunshine from the Treacherous 3 told me that the cat on guitar just went where he went and they let him go. But it was definitely rock guitar, especially if you listen to the instrumental version of Body Rock. That cat is going off, and that was a rock song. And it looks like, you know, the second one would have, you know, could have been Houdini from what Jahlil is saying. Now, I'm going to play Friends and 5 Minutes of Funk back to back. So I also want to tell a story about Friends. Jahlil was the main writer for Houdini, and he spent a lot of time with Larry from what he told me. And he was telling Larry about the idea for Friends. And what he told me, he said, Friends really picks up where War's song, Why Can't We Be Friends, where it ends off, you know, as far as the idea in his head, you know, why can't we be friends? And then Jahlil starts with Friends, you know, that was just his process when he made this song. But for the beat, he said he used to just, you know, beat on the pillow and beat on the wall with that drum beat. It was the drum beat that was stuck in his head. And he told Larry about the idea for the beat. And Larry said, well, for what you want to do, you're going to have multiple kick drums. And Jahlil said, well, you know, just make it happen. Whatever you got to do, this is the beat I'm hearing in my head. And if you got to use 3 kick drums, use 3 kick drums. Now, again, another little historical anecdote. You know, back in the early days of the rap 12-inch, usually there would be a vocal on one side and an instrumental on the other side. That was the format that was set up, you know, by Curtis Blow's record, The Breaks. And Sugar Hill Records would adopt that format as well. They would have a long version on one side for their first few 12 inches and then the short version on the other side. But then they picked that up of having the vocal on one and the instrumental on the back. Just one song. And I think Curtis Blow's first record or second record, The Breaks, and said, you know, instrumental, do it yourself, you know. And that caught on, and Sylvia of Sugar Hill Records began to use that as a template for her singles. Not many times in those early days of 12-inch single that you have classic records that were actually two singles or two songs on one single, but only a few times in the history of the genre have two songs been like monumental, genre-changing, and great. And right off the top of my head, and there are going to be more, but right off the top of my head, The Roof Is On Fire and Request Line, both on the same record. Sucker MCs and It's Like That, both on the same record. But definitely within that canon of songs, you got or singles, you got to throw in 5 Minutes of Funk and Friends. One last anecdote about Friends. If you listen to Friends, of course, it was used by Nas, you know, been used by quite a few people, the drums, but Nas basically, you know, rocked, you know, almost the instrumental of it. But as far as sound quality, I was talking to Jahlil about how their records were so clear. And even today, if you listen to those records that were made like, you know, 82, 83, 84, 85, he was talking about the technology over there in Europe when, you know, they were recording it, you know, for Zomba, you know, Zomba Jive, you know, the label of Billy Ocean and people like that recording on. And what he said was, you know, they set it off for black music with Zomba. Zomba wasn't really doing anything with black music until Houdini. But he said the studio that they recorded in, they had SSL boards and things like that way before they hit the States. So he was saying the sound quality on those records was superior, and I agree with him, was superior. And he was even saying, you know, when Nas sampled that record, you know, they didn't have to do much to it because that was already a clean recording. And I could see that because those records, quality-wise, really stand the test of time.
Mine. We came here together so we could have fun. Me and you, baby, going one. 101. Now this is the last chance for us to get off. So either get loose or you ought to get lost. Cause I'm just about ready to do my thing. Cause I'm a stone cold New York rap machine. I'ma give you what I got, and baby that's plenty. And never has one man rocked so many. I'ma make you wet and make you sweat. Just to see how funky you can get. Now when I'm on the mic I do serve well. And I go by the name of the rapper Ja Rule. Me and my partner, from the start, we used to get together at the dark. Sometimes we rap, sometimes we sing, in the summer or the winter, cause it ain't no thing. And ever since I first came round, side by side with Throwdown, we came here to this here place, to serve you all right to your face. Because this jam here is our showstopper. We did more than you could, but I guess we got it. With the men of the hour, make the ladies scream and holler. Too hot, drop, too sweet, the beat sour. Straight, and I hope that it is not too late. If you want the best, I won't settle for less. Put your money on me, I'm your best bet. Come on, one for the trouble, two for the banks, three for the ladies, four for the plate, 5 minutes of funk. This ain't no jump, so pull your bottom off the tree stump. Ladies real pretty, city to city, but now we're getting down to the nitty gritty. From the bottom to the top, top to the bottom, I'm gonna rock them while I still got them. I'll rap and shower, has style and power, and this is our disco hour. I don't know if all of you have heard, so it's up to me to spread the word about the man that we feel has got the... Now you can look the word up again and again, but the dictionary doesn't know the meaning of friends. And if you ask me, you know I couldn't be much help, because a friend's somebody you judge for yourself. Some are okay and they treat you real cool, and some mistake your kindness for being a fool. We like the...
Hey man, even in this age of digital editing possibilities and computers, I'm still the king of the pause button edit. My OGs know about that pause button mix, pause button mixtape. But anyway, so look, for a cat that goes back to the 60s that played with funk, jazz, and blues artists, listen to that drum beat on Friends. Listen to the other stellar work, bass line on 5 Minutes of Funk, all of it. You know, to come into hip hop and make this kind of music and what you heard previously from Run DMC is incredible.
Game. So
I don't even have time enough to talk about how great Darryl and Joe was, and that's Crush Groove 3. But if, again, you know, I have to promote myself in order to to get you the relevant points, go back and check out my Run DMC lesson. I talk a lot about Darryl and Joe. Incredible beat, a very odd beat, a lot of stuff going on in it. I don't know exactly everything that Larry Smith did in the record. I would love to have talked to Larry Smith before he passed. But, an incredible record, I think, mixed by DJ Red Alert. I know Red Alert did something on it. I think it was mixed by DJ Red Alert. But look, time is getting away, as time always does, so I got to keep it moving. Right, in my effort to make all things relevant and tie all the loose ends together, I mentioned earlier the great Don Blackman, the great funk and jazz artist, rest in peace. He played that lead piano on Jailhouse Rap by the Fat Boys, and that was a top 10 record for the Fat Boys, definitely. Always enjoy watching them perform that at the Fresh Fest, you know, with their jail outfits on and the ball and chain. Classic material. But as you can see, again, that group, that fraternity of artists from Queens, the Jamaica Cats, as they were moving into different things, again, production, they would bring their buddy in to do work. In fact, on Rockbox, which I don't know if I'll get to or not, but, you know, we all know Rockbox was officially regarded as the first official rap and rock combination. And one of the first rap videos played on MTV but Eddie Martinez played guitar, and that was Lenny White's boy, Lenny White was a Jamaica cat, and again, another monumental jazz artist. So, you know, all these things are connected. Jailhouse Rap was a smoker. I don't remember who played bass on that. I don't know who played bass, but I know Davey DMX was on the record. I'm assuming, just from that style, that sounds like a Davey DMX bass line. And there's a group called Output that made a song called Move For Me, and they had another song called Say You'll Be. And Jerome Priester was, rest in peace, now all the greats are gone. Jerome Priester was the lead singer of that group. Jerome Priester is also the cat from Secret Weapon. In fact, he called himself Jerome Secret Weapon Priester and sung Must Be the Music. But that was Davey D's, that was his boy. And a lot of on Tough City, you'll catch a few Output records or records that were credited to Output or Jerome Priester. And they had that same bass line. Davey D has a signature bass line. You listen to One for the Treble, signature. You listen to the Big Beat, also on Tough City CBS Records by Spoony G. You can tell a Davey DMX bass line. But on the credits to that record, everybody was on there. You know, Curtis Blow got a production credit on it. Larry Smith got a production credit, and he also played on it. Larry, Davey DMX, all-star lineup behind that record, an incredible, incredible joint. Fast Life, that's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Used to be the Harlem World Crew back in the days. They were on Nia Records with the Alims. And you can, Google and do your history on that. If you go to the Foundation, go to foundationhiphop.com, you can check out an interview with my good brother, William Waring, Billy Bill. For those of you out there who used to look at the credits on records back in the days, records like Games People Play and Fast Life and Fat Boys, the song by the Disco 3 before they called themselves the Fat Boys, you would see the name W. Waring in the writer's credits. And I remember reading that as a kid. And I had the privilege and honor to talk to William Waring, Billy Bill, who also was down with Kool Cal. And, for those who used to check out the old Profile record, they had a song called Old School on Profile. I know I hit y'all with a lot of information. When I start talking about these rap records, there's so much that connects on them, and I can't stop. Forgive me for making these so long. But Fast Life was written by William Murray, Billy Bill. And baseline on that, I'm pretty sure that was definitely Larry Smith. Now, this is not one that Larry Smith produced. Curtis Blow produced it, and it was really cool that they kept the same stable of people, going all the way back to, 79, 80 when they first, started with Curtis Blow singles. And then, 5 years later in 1984, Curtis Blow is still using Larry Smith, you know, on productions. As I was talking about 12 inches that had two classic singles, you know, Jekyll and Hyde never really blew up like they should have, not in rap, but of course Andre Harrell is, you know, the Andre Harrell that you heard about that did Uptown Records, you know, of course Mary J. Blige and, you know, Heavy D and the Boys, and you know his history with Dad was president of Motown, and then you know, his partner, I think his name was Alonzo Brown. Mr. Hyde, he's doing big things in the television world, and I, you know, I saw him on the Emmys one year. I mean, those guys, they didn't get it in rap, but they got it in every damn thing else. You know, they got theirs. But Jekyll and Hyde never really blew up in rap, but AMPM and Fast Life is another one of those that belongs in that canon of singles that had two, was one single, but two singles on the same record that were classic. And if you listen again to that Fast Life bass line with Larry Smith on it, you know, him and David DMX, they played very similar, but classic.
I've liked many ladies in my day, but just like the wind, they've all blown away. See, to love someone, it's an atmosphere that you both still share when one's not there. There's no real way it can be explained. I guess it's the way I smile when I hear your name. It's the little things you do that mean so much. It's the care that you put into every touch. It's the way I trust you and you trust me. I guess some of us are so lucky. I was known for having the upper hand. I was known as a stone cold ladies man. If it wasn't for you, I'd be that way still. But lately, there's a change in Jalil. Though my friends play games and tease me a lot, I know I'm more than happy with what I've got. When I get up in the morning and go to work, see all day long, I stay alert. Until we come home at night and close the door, two people share one common core. When I say one love, you can trust me, 'cause never have I been so lucky.
One love, one love, you're lucky just to have just one love. One love, one love, you're lucky just to have just one. One love, one love, you're lucky just to have just one love. One love, one love, you're lucky just to have just one. Just to have just one love.
Now the love I used to have just left me cold. I used to buy her everything from diamonds to gold. At first I thought she'd left me cause I didn't buy her enough. But then she left me a note along with all my stuff. Said maybe one of these days you'll have to learn that love is something that you gotta earn. And once you earn it, got to know how to keep it. You got to want it as well as you need it. To have lost love was a hurting lesson, but to have had love was a definite blessing. Now I know what the Beatles were thinking of when they said that money can't buy me love. When you say it's all slow, what do you mean? I just went through the exact same thing.
I'm ready.
Here we go.
Yo, Donkey. Yo, what's up, man? Yo, what's happening tonight, man? I'm going to check out a few skeezers over there, you know what I'm saying? Yo, man, I've seen a lot of skeezers in this place tonight, man.
I know, I'm ready for the wild thing, you know what I'm saying? And it goes a little something like this.
Some say it's an art, some say it's a shame. You would give me your body before your name. But I'm a jigger high, and I'm a jigger low. I'm a jigger wherever it you go. So later on, don't act like you don't. When I pick out the freaks in the front row, I'm the rapper J, that's the rapper X.
I get you in the house, you know what I do? Well, let me tell you a story that's definitely true. When I came to the party, I was by myself. 9 times out of 10, I'm leaving someone else. It's something about the way I rock the microphone. The ladies in the place wanna take me home, stretch me out all along the couch, and show me what your loving is all about. So when I get them, then I let them. I throw my jammy on and pop, and then I wet them.
Cause I'm a hoe. You know I'm a hoe. I rock three different freaks at the every show. Cause I'm a hoe, you know I'm a hoe. How do you know? Because I told you so.
Now the lover of many I just may be, but I'll never touch another man's property. So if you got a little mama, you wanna keep a neat, then keep your little freak off my street.
This is music. Well, Houdini, he was giving them music. I mean, well, Run DMC was giving them music, but he was giving them beats, largely. You know, I don't know what Run and D, if anything, could have did with a beat like One Love. And they probably could have rocked over I'm a Ho, but One Love was just musically, the pianos, the drum programming, and I played the version. It's the 12-inch extended mix, and just the edits on it. Man, perfect record. One Love, I mean, of course, you know, went on to be a greeting term, you know, for the last, you know, ever since Nas, you know, made the song One Love, definitely borrowing the phrase and the saying from this song. Now it's a greeting when you see a person. One Love, you know, it's a greeting, like what's up and peace and everything else. But as far as the production on it, incredibly produced and engineered, sounds good. What can you say about One Love? I mean, the synthesizer work, the drum machine work, the programming of the drum machine, and this is all Larry on this record. You know, to be able to do a Daryl and Joe or a Sucker MCs or a Rock Box and then come back and do a One Love and I'm a Ho is just, if you listen to it, you know, tempo wise it's like up there with, you know, what the cats are doing today with the 808s, and it always had that knock. I'm a Ho, you know, that was, and that's the Back in Black album. That's the second, is Houdini's third album, but the second album that Larry Smith produced. Again, Thomas Dolby mostly on the first album, well, you know, largely on the first album, Larry Smith on Escape and Back in Black, which is the third Houdini album.
Your home on the range. Money was the booger in a stock exchange. You make money on your 9 to 5 to earn your living so you survive. It takes money to pay your rent and to eat. Without money, you're hungry on the street. It takes money, money, cash, money, money, to the bill. So you steal some money, you go to jail, and then you turn around, need some for bail. But then you need a dime to call your lawyer, to plead innocent and say they never saw you. But before you, a lawyer, I'll get you free. He asks how will you pay his fee. But you have no money, you're in a jam. Your lawyer says to throw the man in the slam. It takes money, money, cash, money, money, to the bill. It takes money, money, that's right, cash, money, money, to the bill, to the B-I-double-L bill.
the bubble bunch, the bubble bunch, rocking to the beat.
Well, once upon a time there lived a couple as bad as they could be. So what they did was get together and started a family tree. Well, year by year the tree did grow. They might have been fat, but they wasn't slow. And now they're known as the bubble bunch. And if they wasn't eating dinner, they was eating lunch.
The bubble bunch, the bubble bunch,
the bubble bunch,
the bubble bunch,
the bubble bunch,
rocking to the beat.
The bubble bunch,
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 rocking to the beat.
Dig it. Well, one day as they ate their lunch, the disco bug with the bubble bunch, I heard one.
Okay, and those last two records were Jimmy Spicer. Jimmy Spicer, you know, later on, so that first record was 83. So interestingly, Larry Smith, you know, same year he's doing Sucker MCs, which was a year after he's doing his Orange Crush thing. In the same year as Sucker MCs, he's doing the Money Dollar Bill joint. Jimmy Spicer, which, you know, a lot of people have sampled that, you know, even in very recent years. And then the year before that, in 82, you can see that he did the Bubble Bunch record. And, you know, both of them heavy on bass. Now, David DMX's name is on the, not the production credits, but it's on the credits of Money Dollar Bill. So I don't know if that's him playing the bass line, you know. And I've talked to David DMX, but I failed to ask him about that. But it's that record, Money Dollar Bill, is produced by the great Larry Smith. And then, of course, the Bubble Bunch, which was a hilarious, you know, hilarious tale, and funky, you know. And again, that was, you know, sampled by Busta Rhymes and, you know, some of everybody. So these records are records that stand the test of time, you know, made in the early 80s and sampled, you know, throughout the end of the 80s and all through the 90s and 2000s, still funky. And again, you can see the signature bass line within these. And then sometime in 84 and 85, like I said, the same group of musicians and managers and people stayed together because Jimmy Spicer had a record called Beat the Clock on Def Jam. I think that was 84, 85, probably eight, more like 85. And that was the Maroon, you know, it's like five or six Maroon Def Jam records before they went with the Black record when they were emerged with Columbia on LL's album. So anyway, you know, those Maroon Def Jam albums, you know, Beastie Boys and MCA and LL and the Hollis Crew, and then Jimmy Spicer with his Beat the Clock. So again, the same group of people, and Jimmy stuff was on Mercury along with, you know, Curtis Blow.
I don't want a lot, I want just enough. So why is it got to be so damn tough? Living on the uptown side of Jive, hustling the bucks to stay alive. Looking for a 10 and they give you 5? Well, it's tough. You talk to the boss is gruff. You ask for a raise and they call you bluff. You may get some, but it's never enough, cause it's tough.
Strong,
like a magnet force.
Rough,
like a new divorce.
Mean,
like a 3-time loser.
Bad,
like an LA cruiser.
Down,
like a limousine.
Blind,
like a submarine.
Hard,
like cold concrete.
Tough,
that's the rhythm of the beat.
That's the race.
With 18 phone calls to
Yeah, and of course, those Curtis Blow records, Tough was the first one. Again, that signature bass line. And of course, you know, the Breaks always had that bass line was tough. So those records, again, he didn't get production credits on because he just played bass. He was just invited in to play bass. But they did give him writer's credit on those records. But those records, those first couple were credited to, like I said, I think it was J.B. Moore and Rocky Ford, or I think that was their names, at the label, as I stated previously. So, you know, he came in with Curtis Blow as far as rap recordings, and, you know, Curtis Blow used him several times throughout the year, and maybe even on 8 Million Stories. 8 Million Stories was a album or a song that was on his, I believe it was on his Ego Trip album. And it had Run DMC, you know, as special guests. Run DMC had really just blown up like that year before. And, you know, they were special guests on it. And I'm pretty sure he played bass on 8 Million Stories as well.
Just get off the wall. Let's have a ball. The 70s are gone. It's the 80s, y'all. Grab a fly girl by the hand and ask her to dance. Come on, fellas, don't be shy. Just take a chance. You never know, it might lead to romance. Cause to be the cold stomping, it'll put you in a trance. Just get off the wall. Let's have a ball. The 70s are gone. It's the 80s, y'all. Grab a fly girl by the hand and ask her to dance. Come on, fellas, don't be shy, just take a chance. You never know, it might lead to romance. Cause to be the cold stomping, it'll put you in a trance. You're so hypnotized that you stop and stare. Stepping out of this, cause I'm not with that veil. Get on the damn floor, come on, take a stand. All the girlies in the place wanna dance with you, my man. Get on the floor, work it out if you can. Here's all the girlies in the place wanna dance with you, my man. Get on the floor, work it out if you can. Here's my ulterior motive, I mean my game plan. Doesn't hurt to flirt, just go ahead and chase the skirt. You can't help it, it's your line of work to get the women on the floor. It's you they adore. You might as well give them what they came here for. You know what time it is. 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 You know what time it is.
Okay, so it's like that. Run DMC, you know, nothing needs to be said about that. Other than, you know, again, part of the Sucker MC's 12-inch. And one thing Larry said about that song was it was his attempt to, he said he liked to take rap records that were already popular and do something, you know, he was inspired by rap records that were already popular. And his inspiration for It's Like That was the actual music to Planet Rock by Soul Sonic Force, Afro Bambaataa and Soul Sonic Force. But he said he didn't want to go that high on the beats per minute. He said that was a little too fast for him. So he slowed it down, but the drum program and the beat pattern definitely patterned after Planet Rock. And again, he used the Oberheim DMX drum machine and the Prophet 5 keyboard on that. Pretty much stripped down, not as much as Sucker MCs, of course, but he stripped down to nothing but keyboards and drums on It's Like That. Another top 10 hit. You know, one of the times, you know, in the 80s, you know, you had to have a really good rap record to get daytime radio play. And It's Like That played in the daytime. You know, now Sucker MCs was more like the late night mix show thing if it played on the radio at all. But It's Like That was definitely during the daytime. It played right along whatever was out at the time. Midnight Star and whoever was out on urban radio, you heard It's Like That along with it. And of course, a lot of people didn't know that You Know What Time It Is by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. That's probably around 87 or so. And of course, that one was patterned after, you know, Eric B. and Rakim, Eric B. as president. If you check out my Furious Five lessons, I got two Furious Five lessons up. If you check out the second one, discusses their records after their breakup, you'll see the motivation behind why that record was styled the way it was styled. But definitely you can hear the bass line on there, which also mimicked the bass line to Eric B. as president a little bit, which was the bass line from Fonda Rae over Like a Fat Rat. And that was produced by Larry Smith, and I think Grandmaster Flash got a production credit on that as well. So a lot of people didn't know that Larry did that. Now, one thing Larry said, again, in that Brian Coleman piece, was that, you know, by the time sampling came around, he said, you didn't see my name on anything. You didn't hear anything from me by the time sampling came around, because he didn't respect sampling. Like a lot of musicians didn't. And, you know, you can't be mad at that. I mean, you know, people who play instruments and create, a lot of times, they're, you know, some of them are open to sampling. Now, he did cite the Bomb Squad as being creative with sampling, but he wasn't a fan. And he said he refused to do it. He said he refused to take somebody else's work and not create on his own. And, you know, he had the right to that opinion. And, you know, he's a musician. Many musicians feel and felt that way. Now, he would take something and redo it, like, you know, the song Jam Master Jay, which was a interpolation in some ways. Actually, Jay was cutting Scratching by the Magic Disco Band. I think that was the name of the group. And Jam Master Jay was a funny record, because I know Sal from the Disco Fever, when I interviewed him, he told me that it was such an odd record. That's another one, we've heard it so much for the last 30 years that it doesn't sound odd anymore. But because of the way the beat is, and it's, you know, not really a snare, it's just a hand clap. He said when they, you know, they used to test market these records in the Fever. And he said when they played it in the Fever, nobody danced. Not because they thought it was whack, but it was so different and so left field that people just kind of stood there like, you know, what the hell is that? And that's another, that was just a groundbreaking piece of production. And, of course, Larry Smith again. So that really doesn't even scratch the surface of, you know, how much work he did, you know, produce fully both Houdini's second and third albums. Run DMC's first and second. By the time Raising Hell came out, they were dealing with Rick Rubin. But those first two records, the Run DMC self-titled album and the King of Rock album, you know, fully produced those. You know, he produced B-Boy Breakers for Star Child and Disco B. That's another one written by William Waring. You know, produced and played on more Curtis Blow stuff. You know, you can Google and get the rest of it. But what I attempted to do with this lesson was to show you just his range, you know, how he could go very hardcore and almost gutter with Run DMC and then come back and take you very sophisticated with Houdini. And again, matching both styles. Houdini were cats that would wear, sandals with no socks and leather hats and shirts, you know, halfway buttoned. They would fly, you know, they were, you know, like the same way Frankie, Beverly, and Maze were dressing back in, you know, in the mid-80s. Houdini was that kind of. My mother liked Houdini. You know, she liked the music and the image of Houdini. And she wasn't a huge rap fan by any means, but she that was more to what she was used to. So a group like that was classy, he could produce classy music that matched their image. Then he could produce gutter music that matched, and Run DMC wasn't really gutter, but they definitely were a lot more hardcore, and do it very successfully on both ends of the spectrum, and then come back in and do stuff in the middle like Fast Life by Jekyll and Hyde, and, you know, Jailhouse Rap by the Fat Boys, you know, for the work that he did on that, and, you know, Jimmy Spicer Records and everything else that I displayed for you. So that was Foundation Lesson number 29, the late great Larry Smith, one of the early super producers in the genre. And this is Jay Quan. You can check out my website, foundationhiphop.com. You can check me on all social media at JayquanVA. If you want to send me a direct email, you can send it to Jay Quan, JayQuan, at the Foundation, and you spell the Foundation, T-H-A, Foundation, F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N, Jaquan at thefoundation.com. If you want to send me a direct email for any reason. And that's it. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you got something out of it. Hope that it was educational, enlightening, and entertaining as well. And that's it. Peace.